Hello and welcome to A Radio Geekly, an hour-long insight into the realm of geekdom. So strap yourselves in, beam yourselves up, and blast off with us into another exciting adventure.
There we go.
It's okay.
We'll start it all again. We've got Becky, David, and myself, Jess, here. This is A Radio Geekly. This is open forum day.
Indeed. The grab bag time for you and joining us.
How are both of you doing? It seems like we haven't had this collaboration of the three of us in the studio for quite some time.
I know. I've been gone quite a bit myself. I know you have too, right?
I just got back from a two-week trip to Amsterdam, so it was...
Whoa.
It was exciting. But I'm kind of recovering, that's all.
Yeah, what is the time difference over there?
It's 9 hours ahead of here.
Ahead, okay. Yeah.
So, some good jet lag you've got, yeah.
Nice.
I should be recovered by now. Just
takes a little while, right?
I think Pickles was having a hard time with me being gone. That's the orange tabby.
Oh, okay.
And he's been taking out on us by having his meow... whatever. He seems to be awfully loud of late.
Yeah.
I feel bad for him, but...
Yeah. He's been saving his complaints for when you returned.
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Gotta love those pets. When they make themselves known.
Exactly. Well, we want to make you all known out there in listener land. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 503-231-8000. 8187.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the office quite a bit, and so I get it confused. But that, again...
That is the air room number, and our lovely board operator will patch you through to us, because we're going to talk about all sorts of nerdy topics today, folks.
Oh, yes.
We've got, let's see, LARPing on the table, maybe some gaming of some sorts, comics,
right,
anime,
Eldritch Horror,
toys,
all of it.
All of the things. Becky, where would you like to start?
Well, I want to give props to one of our fellow collective members, Rob Lacoste, for a fantastic LARPing experience that was at OMSI After Dark not too long ago. I think last week, I would even say.
Can you describe what LARPing is?
That is live action role playing, and that was my participation in it as one of the player characters. But it was a large-scale game that went all around the museum at OMSI. Yeah. And so this one, he's put on a lot of different games. Rob is kind of a genius when it comes to that. But this one was about the robot revolution. And participants, like the players, could, they had a decision to make whether or not that they were going to maintain the status quo and remove rogue programming from all the androids around the museum.
Wow.
Or support the revolution and bought the planet. So you went around. I was a one of the androids.
Okay.
I wore a cuff that had like a special code, and
gotcha.
then you would then go to a website. It's still up, I think, thevictorycondition.com.
Okay.
And then you would try to find us. Our pictures are on there, and then you would attempt to get our code. Put it in, and it would either, you could choose to like debug us or encourage us for this autonomy.
Wow.
But, as androids, we would thwart, we had like our own programming. So we were thwarting the, the gathering of our codes because, how can you trust a human, So we would walk off or deactivate or, start like, a garbled mess. And, humans, as they went around the museum, would get, like, codes so that they could, like, get us to do, like, to give them the code or to stop walking away or whatever.
I'm curious. How did this work? Did you show up and decide to do it at the OMSI, or was it sanctioned by the OMSI?
Yeah, it's part of their OMSI After Dark series.
Okay.
Sometimes the large game action that happens, it's something that is like pretty fastidiously planned and then part of the festivities.
That's neat. How many people participated?
Oh gosh. I think Well, for the androids, we had quite a few androids. I think, let me count 14 different androids around the museum. And then we had a bunch of different players come in. I think at one point I was giving instructions at the table. I think I had about 20 or 30 people get instructions. So there were lots of different people playing the game. And I've participated in some of Rob's games before, and they include, you know, anybody that walks by gets, you know, enticed in to play a game. There are prizes and things like that. And I know like hundreds of people participate at these OMSI After Dark events. So anyway, it was a really cool, you know, LARPing experience for me. I was part of a robot team. The radio bots, of course, and we, you know, had to make up our own like radio sounds and like programming and stuff. So that's
was it just
fun.
Like a bunch of like white noise?
Yeah, there'd be like,
just say nothing.
Yeah,
like dead air.
Yeah, exactly. Or you know, you are listening to Radio Revolution Radio.
So how
Robot Revolution Radio?
How did it end?
Oh. Well, everybody had to get the codes for all of the robots. And then once you had done so, then you would win a prize. But it's just how it ended, you collecting it. But the robots made it a challenge to even get the codes. So that made for...
So each individual robot was able to put on their own stubborn ways to keep the code from...
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, which was really fun to be the annoying radio bot.
I don't understand this.
We have a caller. Hey, caller, you're not getting my code. Walk away.
Yeah.
Have you done a lot of LARPing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To me, it'd be hard to get past that hurdle of awkwardness, like the make-believe. Mm. It's kind of like going door-to-door and bothering people. It's like once you can get past that hump, you're like, okay, I'm in it now.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's all free, you know.
Yeah, suspension of disbelief, I think, yeah, is kind of the hardest part, because you're kind of asked to step out of like your normal experience in that way.
Comfort.
Mm-hmm.
But if everyone's on board, and I guess that would really help if people are into it, people like you who've done it a lot.
Yeah, and who are like overall like excited about pretending to be things.
Yeah, it's like dancing in public. You gotta get, gotta consider everyone looks silly.
Yeah. So you wouldn't consider yourself an inner flash mobber?
Not yet.
Not yet.
There's too much of that self-awareness I've had just all my life. But it's just silly because it's like it's holding, you know, back on the fun.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's also just, you know, sometimes, like I recently played a LARP that was called Hug Street, and you know, while the rules were simple, it was basically you pretending to be a traitor of like gestures and like high fives and things like that.
Okay.
Like as if you were on Wall Street, but you're instead of money or stock, you were trading like, you know, hip bumps and high fives and hugs and things like that.
So this is just interacting in public.
Yeah.
So you're just getting hugs from strangers.
Well, no. You had like a group of players, like instead
all
of
participated.
It being, yeah. Okay. And so everybody like, you know, had their own stock and trade, I suppose. And then you had different days of trading, but you know, you kind of have to, like just pretend like, yeah, I'm definitely like, I'm the trader of like, you know, the black market, you know, handshake, double fisted, like bump or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it became really interesting how, you know, despite the rules kind of like being a little open and basic, how, you know, like these other systems of like commodity trading and human interaction emerged. Because then you had like, you know, people who were kind of policing all that and, you know, telling you like, you can't put that on your trade sheet, like that kind of thing.
Oh, you actually have rule keepers, like referees, yeah, or something.
Yeah, yeah. And then you had to hide, you know, within the small group of people playing, you know, the fact that you were, you know, your commodity's not on the board, so, you know, there's a lot of like subterfuge. And
is that typical with LARPing? Like, did you have refs at the OMSI?
Not in this particular game, no. But, you know, there have been other LARPing opportunities where you have, you know, folks that, you know, especially with, like, the creation of weapons, you know, like, the non, like, you know, the foamy weapon guys, you know.
Foamy, what, like a foam sword?
Yeah, or, like, with shields and armor
and
stuff.
Oh, that, okay.
Yeah, like, that kind of LARP. Right. You know, they're definitely like gamekeepers in that way.
Keep it safe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, like it's difficult, I think, to make the translation from the idea of magic use and that being kind of a, I mean, like, you know, I'm sorry out there for anyone that's like, I believe in magic. Like, okay, but it's also difficult to show in a game. So, like, you know, how do you manifest, like, I'm a wizard in this LARP and I'm going to, you know, like, cast my spells.
Yeah.
You know, you have to kind of come up with, like, a common language and, like, methodology in order to do so.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by this, like, kind of the new avenues that you were describing of LARPing, because I've always seen it as battling, you know. There's always one side versus another, or it's just like, we're on this mission together. It's like a band of, you know, friends that are going to, you know, into the dragon's lair and all that kind of thing.
The dragon's lair.
So I see it more of like the fantasy kind of like mythos where you're going into and stretching your imagination. But LARPing can really be anything, any kind of platform, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's really cool to hear those different types of, you know, I haven't heard of robot LARPing, but it's like... Why yeah. wouldn't it be?
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, you're just action. You're that's live role play, and it's a little more, you know. You know, we've explored this topic before, and the conventional role play that is a little more pen and paper and dice based, and
true,
you know, that sort of thing. Like, it's great, and you do a bit of, like, you know, that acting, you know, the stage performance kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then when it translates to live action role play, like, it's a little more, immersive in that way. But
okay.
It could be, like you mentioned, you know, a means to take a look at, like, alternative ideas, like systems of economy, for example. You know, it's kind of a cool transcendent way to think about gaming.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've, you know, like you were talking about with live action role play, a lot of role playing game formats have been kind of developing out from that tabletop platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they create all these worlds, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and all of those kind of things, and how you're seeing yourself, but it's not, you're immersing yourself, like, through your mind and the things that you say. I mean, I even have friends that are in D&D groups that change their voices, you know, to match their characters, things of that nature, and how you're going through and, you know, this is me now, but I'm talking with an accent, and, you know, like, how you play the game. And so,
well, could we, I would love to give a shout out to anybody out there. If you are a role player,
ooh, yeah,
if you yourself are a LARPer, if you would like to talk about, you know, the way that you approach your role playing, please give us a call. We are inviting discussion here at,
and what is that number, Becky?
Well, that number is 503-231-8187. Again, 231-8187. So give us a call, join the conversation. I'm getting amped up because I love role playing.
Yeah, and you know what's really fun? There is actually, I don't know if you know this, Becky, but I'm going to expand your mind in the board gaming realm. There's a game called Role Player, where the whole purpose is you're actually building D&D characters. So you're rolling dice, you're creating your stats, and that's the whole game. And so from there, it's like you can create all these character realms and be like, now I'm going into a D&D session or something like that. And so it's like this, like, cross, kind of a little bit of a cross genre between the different gaming platforms. But yeah, I have not played it myself, but I have heard a lot of fun for those folks that are just really I just want to create my character.
Ooh.
And be ready, you know, just rolling a bunch of D20s or whatever. Like, yeah, I recommend checking that out.
Oh, totally. Well, I love the idea of character creation, and I think that it can be carried across different types of games.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, even in Magic the Gathering, I feel like, you know, every deck has, like, a character attribute. And so whether or not it's, you know, you're trying to, you know, fight with fire, or you like goblins, or, you know, whatever it happens to be that, you know, the character kind of does, like, what is the characteristic of your deck? You can build it but it's not necessarily in the traditional sense, like, mm-hmm. you know, character creation in a role-playing scenario, but you are, like, it's just a different kind of avenue for which you create that.
Yeah.
And I think that's specifically, like, it's really common, though, and I think it has been expanded upon by, you know, folks in the magic world. Not to say that I'm, like, a super, like, in-depth person in that, but I know that commander decks are, like, a good example of that, where, like, the creation of a deck is centered on having one really powerful commander card, basically, and then, like, all of the other attributes kind of fall in line with that.
Hmm.
So,
David, have you got to play Magic since you and Tabitha and Kyle sat down?
I haven't.
Oh, no.
It's been a while.
What was your experience, like, takeaway from it? Were you, like, intrigued to want to learn more, or were you just like, oh, this was cool?
It was fun.
Okay.
And I would like to do it again in a setting like that where we're, you know, non-competitive, really just having fun.
Right.
But I could see, I mean, it's easy to slip into the, like, you know, like, it's hard to lose sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like, especially with the investment of, like, emotional energy in your deck. Like, oh, man, my Tim deck is supposed to be bomb. And then to get clobbered by something else does feel weird.
Yeah. So I have not invested in any cards. And and I haven't, I guess, I could see what would ultimately happen with my... I'd make my wife suffer playing me in a game she doesn't want to play. So, so that's probably best.
Well, there are a lot of, I'm sure, open forum gaming sessions for Magic.
Yeah.
Around the city.
That
is one of those games that I feel that's kind of always has a platform for somebody to learn. There's always open gamers that are willing to teach people. And I mean, like Tabitha, like I think she was like super excited to... Mm-hmm. To teach you both how to play it.
And jeez, that was like a year ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You need like a little refresher.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, I think we have a caller.
We do. We have Nick on the phone. Hello, Nick. How's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
Doing well. Do you have stories to share about LARPing?
No. I don't exactly. I have a thought, an idea, which is very rudimentary. Now, I wonder, I haven't played any live-action role games, but I've done some acting, some improv. I'm sort of mm-hmm. familiar with the idea of playing a role, you know, in a fun situation with other people. But this idea I've got is of, I wonder if there's any role-playing games out there which represent some piece of the real world where you're sort of, like, for example, you're trying to solve a problem mm-hmm. that actually exists in the real world, and you're doing it in this game. Like, for example, you could have somebody be somebody's the refugee. Somebody is the, you know, then you have the divided political factions of the country that they're coming into, and then you have the, you know, the evil dictator on the other side. I mean, I don't know. I haven't thought this through. It's just, it's just an idea, and I hear you talking about role-playing games, and they seem to focus a lot on, you know, more of the pure fantasy, that, you know, and science fiction type stuff. I wonder if any of it goes into a more realistic realm.
I think that there are a bunch of different games. I think the idea that you're proposing, in my mind, it kind of had its genesis in something called the World Game that was developed in the 1960s by Buckminster Fuller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like the big great world peace game, basically, and that it would facilitate this comprehensive and anticipatory design science approach to solving problems.
Yeah, you got the lingo and everything.
Well, thank you. But I know that also, like, you know, there are different LARPs. So the world of LARPing is super rich and I think, like, filled with very creative folks. And I have played LARPs where, like, they were focused on things like, you know, what are issues of consent, and what about, like, you know, people's personal space, and how to talk about, you know, how comfortable someone might be in terms of, like, interacting in, you know, like, an interpersonal setting and discussing, you know, like, what does kind of, like, you know, harassment or whatever, like, how does that come up and how do you, like, you know, approach those issues with others? So, you know, it can be problem solving, I think, on like a micro level in that way, but also like the, you know, world game macro level. And I think it's a great way to kind of brainstorm, because gameplay, you know, like it initiates this whole idea of flow and, you know, you being in another state where you are open to development of ideas, as an example. So,
yeah.
Well, I think it might even be empowering for, you know, a populace that is not involved in politics to have some practice and begin to think about how you or me could influence a larger outcome.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's, you know, maybe a little more accessible than, you know, I think maybe even personally for me, like, you know, the civic engagement piece and going, you know, to City Hall or going through like the I think intense experience of running for political office is like, you know, a little difficult to grok at, you know, like this state that I might be in. But, you know, like that empowerment piece that you speak to, I think is like a really, it's kind of an amazing way to like introduce those ideas to somebody that, you know, could be really, you know, like a part of that and have ideas and would be able to like very easily like integrate into the world of politics, but like maybe just needs a little nudge.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at.
Yeah, thanks, Nick, for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I mean, just the idea of that, I was thinking of a story I heard a while ago, and I'm looking at it right now. There's a online, like, actual games that you can do for science where they solve real-world problems. This one I'm looking at is called Fold It. It's like fold.it, but it was basically you're creating molecules or retroviruses. It's one of those games you would think you'd see on it's just like your smartphone where you're just playing around with puzzles and stuff, but it's actually, you know, you're crowdsourcing solutions to find, you know, solutions to issues in science and chemistry and stuff like that. So, you know, it's kind of a similar thing where you're actually working with just solving puzzles, but actually doing something for the greater good.
Yeah.
So. That's incredible. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, I think we have another call.
We have Mike on the phone. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well. Welcome. Do you have your, questions or comments about LARPing?
Yeah, I just had two questions, actually, because I've never actually done LARPing before, but I was wondering if there is a side for like Jedi, like Star Wars type LARPing, as opposed to like medieval, because that's all I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And two, is there like a pro LARPing league, or is there like a, you know, a popular like LARPer amongst, like, is there a LARPing community where there are like actual like good fighters?
Oh yeah. Mm. Well, I can't really speak to the pro aspect in that way, but I do. I went to Florida State University, and I think they had like a swordplay club. And the swordplay club would go on like the green, and they would like, you know, they're just like practice swords, I think, and probably made of like mostly foam.
People wearing chainmail and everything to deck out, the ones I've seen. Yeah.
Well, the Tallahassee makes it hard because it's like 1,000 degrees all the time. Uh-huh. So chainmail is very uncomfortable. But a part of that was that they were going out to practice form. And so, like, you know, part of the whole club was to like make sure that people became proficient at it, like built endurance, and then like learned the art of swordplay outside of, I think, that what might be a little more inaccessible, you know, like going to fencing classes or, you know, the number of other things.
Have you ever seen any type of like Jedi or like any Star Wars type theme?
Well, I was going to say, Mike, that I met a group of folks at Comic-Con a couple years back. They were called the Outer Rim Collective, and they actually have, you know, real life Star Wars themed costumes and do like events and stuff in the city. And some of them, I believe, have been extras on some Star Wars films. And so I would definitely encourage you to like check them out.
They actually, my daughter and I, we went to story time at the library in Forest Grove, and they had a whole Star Wars crew there. Like, they actually, that must be the same people, because they go around and for basically free, just to do it as fun, they dress up in the Star Wars gear and stuff like that. So I was just I thought immediately about them. I was like, I wonder if they do anything like that.
It's actually, if you go to StarWarsOregon.com, they have a group that do events, and they were at that, whatever the recent con was at the convention.
Yeah, they're great.
But yeah, just people who like to dress up.
Star Wars Oregon, and then also OuterRimCollective.org. Those folks for sure. They were super friendly. But yeah, they had the costuming down to a T. So I could only imagine that a few, if not a good majority of those folks know about LARPing in some form, or even participate themselves.
Yeah, and we also, if you have a chance to go to the KBOO website and look up our Radio Geekly archives on, I think it was like June of last year, episode 10, we kind of had a chance to talk with folks from Dystopia Rising, which was a pretty intense type of LARP. So in a way, like, I do think that there are pro leagues sort of in that, you have folks that like they dedicate like a weekend or a week to like not ever breaking character, always LARPing. So.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah,
there's some hardcore people out there. So
I would encourage you give it a ear.
This is a fun conversation, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us.
There was also a Star Wars D&D, I remember back in the day, where it wasn't D&D, it was like the Verdant, whatever, the roll of dice, whatever.
I mean, there are different like modules to D&D for sure. Like, what was it? You were describing, oh, that role-playing game, role-player, where you are, doing character creation. But there are a number of it reminded me so deeply of Traveler, which is a role-playing platform where the character creation is pretty intense, and it's kind of in of itself a kind of storytelling. And so it was that reminded me a lot of that. But I mean, D&D is almost, it's like kind of a skeleton, and then you have Star Wars modules that are like super immersive, like versions, and like they have like their own kind of guidebooks and things like that. But also things like Call of Cthulhu that have like, I think that particular game has like its own kind of homebrew system. But it's definitely founded on like a very specific time period and mythology and everything. So
cool. Well, we're going to take a short music break. I think let's go for track 3 there, Ray.
And track 3.
We'll come back and talk more open forum here on Radio Geekly.
Thank you.
That just reminds me. Oh, man.
I love a good mashup.
Yeah. Stranger Things and Game of Thrones there from local artist Glasses. And this is a Radio Geekly. I've got Becky and David in the studio with me. I'm just Jess.
Hi.
And, you know, all this talk about LARPing and things kind of reminds me of, like, wanting to go to conventions. I know.
But
it's convention time.
But
convention
I hear tell. Time. We have a lucky collective member.
We do.
Doing some conventioning this very moment.
We have a hardcore Trekkie that actually went out to Las Vegas. So, and she has graciously called us on the phone. Godiva!
Godiva!
Hello!
Yay!
This is the second time you've been to Star Trek Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, and I've got my head on a little better this year. I'm not so overwhelmed.
So. You have all the experience already, so you know.
Well, I had never been to a convention at all last year, so.
Wow.
It was, yeah.
And you had quite a time. There were lots of celebrity interaction.
Oh, yeah. Not so much this year. Last year was the Next Generation anniversary, and all of those actors are known for being very supportive of their fans and very interactive. Mm. And this year is more of a Discovery and Deep Space Nine year. And
They
are also very lovely people, but they are more reserved, rightfully so. They're both very popular shows.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Was DS9 kind of more your Trek?
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay. I grew up with the original series on VHS.
Okay.
Deep Space Nine, Sisko's my captain.
Mm-hmm. Samesies.
Awesome. So what have you seen and heard and experienced so far?
A lot of panels, a lot of really good, interesting questions. I only just started the convention. Yesterday was my first day, but last night was Klingon karaoke. And hands down, if nobody's ever been to the Star Trek convention yet and they're going, do not miss Klingon karaoke.
Oh, my word.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Wow. Did you participate?
I had friends that went up and sang, and I gotta drop the setting, describe the scenery for you.
Yes,
it's in
please.
Quark's bar, and they've got Ferengi bartenders who are serving you. Everybody is dressed to the nines. They're all in their cosplay. There's guys dressed as Data singing We Will Rock You on the stage. O'Reilly and Herzl, the guys who play Martok and Gowron in the Deep Space Nine series, are the ones who lead it on, full makeup, full costume. They've got blown up guitars. They're using their mic stands as guitars, and they're doing backup singing for you on stage.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That's so cool, Godiva.
I wish those two would just be my hype men, like, every day. Like, I wish they were just my best friends. Like,
yeah. Be in your corner. That's so great.
Mm-hmm.
I know you were working on some kind of, like, outfits and stuff. Were you going to do any cosplay?
Yeah, so tomorrow is more of a Deep Space Nine day, so I'm going to be dressed up as Intendant Kira, which is the Mirror Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Kira. And she's got, I have half the outfit already. She's got the leather pants and the spiked high heel boots. So I was like, I can just throw the shirt together.
Easy peasy.
And then I've got the original series science officer girl going on today.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Are you going to stay for the entirety of the convention?
Yeah, another... Again, if nobody's ever been to the Star Trek convention in Las Vegas, there's an after-con pool party, and it's for, like, the come-down of the convention that happens, because you do get really depressed
Klingon
when the convention's done.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, everybody collects at the pool on Monday after the end of the convention, and we all just, like, reminisce, and it's a great time. So I'm staying until Monday night.
Well, that's a good way to go, though, and I'm glad that there's a collective mechanism that you can, you know, start your separation, the painful going away from the con. Are you looking forward to any particular panels, or what's the thing that you're really excited about?
Well, today was a really great panel. It was the Deep Space Nine panel. There was Ira and Andrew Robinson and Nicole DeBoer and
Wow.
Chris Masterson. And they talked a lot of great stuff. They couldn't say too much because there's the Deep State Nine documentary that's coming out.
No kidding.
I was really sad. There was a great question about, like, to not say it nice, if Rick Berman hadn't stuck his nose in everybody's business, what would you have done better for the LGBT community representation on screen? And they were going to go into it, but Ira was like, no, guys, we talked about this in the documentary, and I don't want to spoil anything. And I was like, no.
But that's why you're at a con.
I know, especially because, like, there was a lot of, like, repressed LGBT representation on it. Like, they tried so hard, and they almost did. Like, Jadzia was like, they had to keep it under wrap. And Esri, too, about the trans representation. Mm-hmm. She was an old man, and then she turned into a woman, and everybody was just fine with it. Like, nobody ever gave her anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my favorite memes going around now is the one where Jadzia is hugging, who is it? Her old friend, who's part of the Cardassians.
I think it's either Martok or Gowron.
I think it's Martok, yeah. And, okay. And you know, Jadzia is hugging them. He goes, oh, my good friend Curzon. And she says, I'm Jadzia now. And it's just, oh, my good friend Jadzia, like a three-panel meme.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to be.
I know.
That's my dead name. This is my new name now. And they're just supposed to be like, all right, great. If I screw up, sorry. Mm-hmm. Jadzia now.
Well, I'm really excited. I didn't know that there was going to be a Deep Space Nine documentary. I'm looking at the website now, ds9documentary.com. Mm. What We Left Behind, looking back at Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And, you know, I'm really excited to see that they're going to be talking about some of the things that I think the series kind of dropped as like an opportunity to talk about more inclusive LGBTQ kind of issues.
Yeah, and another thing I'm really excited about, too, going into Deep Space Nine is the Gays in Space party that happens on Saturday nights. The whole cast of Deep Space Nine is supposed to be there.
What?
Besides Avery and Sid. Obviously, Avery and Sid couldn't make it. Mm-hmm. But and then the whole, like, most of, a good chunk of the cast of Discovery is supposed to be there, too. I've heard rumors. This isn't official, but I've got sources telling me that both of the full cast is going to be there. So.
Oh my God!
I wish I was there!
Man, you need to report back. We need to probably have a bonus episode of just...
Oh, yeah.
Godiva goes to Star Trek Las Vegas year
well,
two.
I want to get interviews.
Yes! Oh my God, you're amazing!
Yay!
I know, a big thing I'm excited about is just like, I know last year I tried to go to the Gays in Space dinner, and it was like just so refreshing because there was somebody who was like, we are obviously not straight, me and my group walking around. And we would get a lot of slack from, straight guys.
Yeah.
Who would follow us around and be like, why do you always have to, like, say the characters are gay when they're obviously not gay and blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's tiring and I don't want to have to sit down and explain that. I'm on vacation. And then you can just go to a Gays in Space event and chill with the actors and nobody gives you a hard time and you can just it's like refreshing. It's so good.
I'm glad that there's a space, but I'm disappointed to hear that there's, you know,
there's
that contingent
that.
Of gross like, you know, oppression following you around. Well, dang.
Hold your head up high, Godiva.
Yeah, I'm thankful for Randy and Dan, so I get to have that tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, awesome. This sounds so cool.
Yay.
I'm so glad you're there.
Yay.
Next time, pack me in your luggage, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'll get two bags. I'll pack one bag and I'll throw you in the other one.
Okay, great.
There we go.
Two check bags.
Well, have fun, Godiva. We'll let you go. Enjoy the rest of the convention. Well,
thanks for calling
in and reporting. Yay.
Yay. Thank you so much. Have a good show, guys.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Oh, man.
I know. I love cons. I haven't been to one in a little while. I think the last one was Wizard World.
Oh, was it? Was that your last con?
I mean, no. GameStorm, duh.
No. That's okay. No, I was
like
asking
a million
years
ago. Like, you know, you walk into GameStorm and it's all of a sudden like this cool other universe of like board gaming and stuff. So
Games.
And we've got lots of cons here in the Portland area for sure.
What's coming up? What are a few things that people can check out?
Well, coming up is Rose City Comic Con, Oregon's largest comics and pop culture convention, they say. That's September 7th through the 9th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. And then...
I love how it says it's like comics / pop culture, where now it's kind of seeming to be a lot more pop culture. But, you know, it's still...
Hey, you know, like, things change.
Yes.
Things change. The only constant in this universe is change. We have the Portland Retro Gaming Expo coming up as well at the Convention Center, but that's going to be October 19th through the 21st. That's a locally produced event that celebrates the colorful history of console, computer, and arcade gaming. And I hear tell that they have a large arcade that participants get to play with all that weekend. So
wow,
just a heads up. I haven't been yet, but I hope to go this year. And you know, we've got some other cool stuff like the CthulhuCon, like H.P. Lovecraft.
Coming up in October at the Hollywood Theater, October 5th through the 7th.
Yeah, there's always a lot of interesting stuff. They show a variety of eldritch horror films and then have a number of illustrious writers come in and they, you know, do panel discussions and talk about, you know, all things, you know, cosmic horror, which is great. I'm myself a humongous fan of it, but it's been like, I think I went the first year I lived in Portland and then and kind of just have been busy, but that's coming up. I think what you said, early October, right?
Yeah.
So
what about, so you were saying with, you're into the cosmic horror.
The cosmic horror. Yes.
How would you define that?
Putting me on the spot.
How would it be like folks, like who would you say was influenced? Obviously H.P. Lovecraft, but other people that have influenced that genre?
Yeah, well, you have like kind of the big three, and with H.P. Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard, they're all part of that Weird Tales scene. But my favorite author of all of them is Clark Ashton Smith. I think it was when I first experienced, like, you know, kind of that, I guess, like, ethos? Through role-playing game, actually. I played Warhammer, like the World of Terrible or Horrendous Roleplay or something. It's hard to differentiate because Warhammer is also very well known for like the figurines, but there's a older version of it that is all pen and paper.
Oh, interesting. Roleplay.
And so, you know, I played, this is, I think, like more than 10 years ago or something. But with a really creative set of folks, and you know, they were bringing in some of the, like the ideas and mythologies that Clark Ashton Smith kind of wrote in his books, and so it was like a really interesting sort of difference, because I think Call of Cthulhu and H.P. Lovecraft has its own like very specific like I guess feel to it.
Okay.
And I think Clark Ashton Smith goes I think further beyond, so it isn't, you know, like the oh my goodness, I'm a normal person experiencing weird things. Oh my God, the thing from space.
Yeah.
It's more like you are on a different planet altogether in a different universe. And there's like a whole other like set of like, you know, rules and environments and things like that. So, and then, you know, a friend of mine had introduced me to the Hashish Eaters, or The Apocalypse of Evil, which is an epic poem by Clark Ashton Smith. I mean, like, truly epic, like, not in the, oh, it's awesome kind of way, but, like, it's long.
Wow. Yeah.
And I remember reading through it, and then, like, not often am I a person to have to, like, have a dictionary near me, but, like, that one, like, every other line, I'm like, I don't know what that word is.
I need to look it up.
Yeah. So, you know, I've really kind of, and then, like, the short stories are a little more, like, approachable. He has a humongous body of work. And that includes, you know, not just, like, you know, prose, but poetry.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I've been searching for, like, a good Clark Ashton Smith anthology for a while. I finally found one.
Whoa.
The Dark Idalion and Other other fantasies.
Which Becky, would you like to read us some Clark Ashton Smith for myself, for David, and also for our dear listeners?
I'm going to read the poem, The Eldritch Dark. Now as the twilight's doubtful interval closes with night's accomplished certainty, a wizard wind goes crying eerily, and on the woad mishappen shadows crawl, miming the trees, whose voices climb and fall, imploring in sabbatic ecstasy. The sky where vapor mounted phantoms flee from the scythed moon impendent over all. Twin veils of covering cloud and silence, thrown across the movement and the sound of things, make blank the night, till in the broken west, the moon's ensanguined blade a while is shown. The night grows whole again. The shadows rest, gathered beneath a greater shadow's wings.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm like, I was talking to Jesse about this episode. I'm like, I have this book. I'm really excited.
I want to read the things.
Dramatic reading.
No, that was great. That was great.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I could see that being a little bit different than just, you know, the realm of, you know, Arkham that H.P. Lovecraft creates.
Yeah, know? Yeah. The different worlds thing, I think, is pretty amazing. You know, like, there's one, let me see if I can find the story. Because I at this moment, I'm, like, blanking on, like, the different, like, the because they all have different world mm-hmm. names. Mm-hmm. And I could find it in a second, but, like, you know, you have the short stories of, let's see, where is that? Gosh, I'm just blanking. It's one where, like, there's a necromancer.
Oh, okay.
And they are kind of, in a way, goading through, like, their whole, like, you know, the remainder of their life and, like, informed by, like, the stars and, you know, this interesting... I don't want to...
No, so what is the name of that book?
This one.
Yes.
The Dark Eidolon and Other Fantasies.
Okay.
I said that right. Yeah.
Yes. Sure.
Yes.
Sure, we'll take that.
Yeah. Great book. Like, yeah. It's a wonderful anthology.
Wow. I wonder if any folks have recommendations on books, so, you know, fantasy and horror and things like that, or even convention related, you know, things that have come from books and fantasy created, like CthulhuCon,
yeah,
things like that. So
we invite you to call.
Yeah. What's that number again, Becky?
It's 503-231-8187. Join us in conversation about these topics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed. There are other events going on in town. I'm really excited for King Fader Laser Vision
at
Beulah Land. That's going to be at 118 Northeast 28th Avenue in Portland on August 5th, this Sunday at 8 p.m. So what this is a live Laserdisc mixing adventure with many rarely seen pre-internet video gems.
Whoa.
Yes. So as somebody who, like, I have kind of a weird geekdom, I suppose. I'm really nerdy about obsolete recording technology.
Are they actually going to be using laser discs?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Laser discs, like, projected on the wall and everything. So, yeah. When I saw that, I'm like, oh, King Fader, you're amazing. Like, mixing laser discs? Have never heard of it. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah. I think one thing that I'd like to do pretty soon, because I love cassette tapes, and I want to do, like, a live mix of that too.
Ooh.
With, like, a bunch of different decks everywhere, like, kind of daisy chain together.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I haven't really, like, thought of it. I'm sure that there's somebody in town or a bunch of somebodies in town who do, like, that live tape mix kind of scene already, but, you know, I want to try it.
Yeah.
We have, like, a VHS party someday. Hey.
Hey. Do you still have
side eye.
Do you still have, like, players to play them on, Becky? Or do you have to, like, go, like, you know, thrift store shopping?
I think it would have to be, like, thrifting. And okay. I think even then, like, you know, my odds for success are probably pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah.
For VHS.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a lost amount of just craziness when it came to VHS. They were pumping out everything in that format.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is just, you know, it was only in VHS.
Yeah.
I like watching those, you know, just internet videos where they dig up old VHS stuff that should never have been made, but it's hilarious. Mm-hmm.
That's a big favorite of mine too. Everything is Terrible. They yeah. have like a great selection of VHS.
Oh.
Like mostly like, you know, educational videos and weird infomercials and things like that.
It was a cash grab. Everyone wanted, you know, there was something to be made on anything. You can make a video on anything. Unfortunately, as fun as that was, it is so much worse now when you just look at YouTube, you know, except that it's so much more available.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the VHS world, though, it's like, yeah, how did this ever exist? But then just take a step back and look at what exists now being made at this very second.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been crazy.
Yeah.
millions and millions of dollars being dumped into these things.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I have an appreciation for, I think, like, you know, the older technologies in that way, you know, like they did have that limiting factor because, like, you had to get the physical thing and that somehow, like, cost money and then you recorded
yeah.
it, you know.
There was that.
Yeah. And right now you can, you know, like, you wouldn't yourself even need to have the technology. You could, you know, find somebody in order to do the recording or whatever and... And then all of a sudden you're on YouTube star, doing something probably mortifying.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's ever happened to me or anything. Don't look it up.
Right.
Oh, well. But Laserdiscs now, like, I, you know, I'm sure that there are publications of, like, you know, this older media that only... was on that particular media for whatever reason, for whether or not it was, you know, the idea was only so worthy or timely or whatever. So I'm kind of excited to see, like, what the Laserdisc gem scenario might be. Is it going to be really of that era?
Mm-hmm.
Like, aesthetically?
Laserdisc lasts a lot longer than I realized. I need to look that up. But, like, yeah, analog lasers, it's just kind of weird to... consider
analog lasers
because it's like a record player played with the laser. It's not digital. That's what people don't realize. It was a laser beam was reading the grooves on the disc to play it analogly. Hmm. It's not a digital format. DVD, that's digital.
Mm-hmm.
Laser discs, it was like playing something off, you know, it was analog basically.
Right, that's fascinating. So visual records, I guess.
Hmm.
To simplify it dramatically.
It's also cumbersome.
Very, very
expensive.
Yeah.
Yes.
The players.
Very sciencey.
I mean, I don't think I've ever witnessed a laser disc being played. Like, I've never
really
been around the equipment because, like, you know,
well,
nobody could afford it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a chance. We can all imbibe of the laser discs being mixed live at Beulah Land on August 5th.
Yeah, yeah. That's very, like, technological science kind of things. And speaking of science, there's another event on August 21st called Science on Tap. It's a series of lectures at the Alberta Rose Theater. And on the 21st, they're going to talk about women in science.
Very
inventive
cool.
connections, they call it. Movie stars, math, and marine mammals. How actresses back in the early days of Hollywood were making some strides in the scientific world. So,
who was that actress? I gotta look it up.
Heidi Lamarr.
That's it. The specific
one. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. PBS had a good documentary on that.
Yeah. So, info about that. Ticket information, albertarosetheater.com, but that's going to be on August 21st, starting at 6 p.m. So.
Oh, yeah. And then speaking of, like, women in science and all of that, Geek Girl Con is coming.
Ooh, yeah!
Oh,
are you going?
I really want to go.
Okay.
October 27th and 28th in Seattle. Only 84 days, 12
wow.
hours, and 6 minutes away.
There we go.
I mean, like, I remember, you know, getting one of our first episodes highlighted Geek Girl Con.
Yes.
And one of the coolest things that I remember about it was all of the, like, the science tracks for kids.
Yes.
Like, for girls to check out and, like, get their hands in a bunch of science. So
yeah.
That was really cool. And, you know, I haven't looked at this website, but geekgirlcon.com would have all of the information about it.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they still have that kind of science stuff.
Yeah. Sounds like they probably would.
I mean, I would imagine. Science is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to have science in your life.
Awesome. Well, thanks to David, Becky, and myself, just Jess, and for all of our callers for calling in and giving their input on this open forum session of Radio Geekly.
No.
We want to thank Ray, our lovely board op, for helping lay it down and clicking on the CD tracks and all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned at noon for Moving On here on KBOO Portland. And enjoy the rest of summertime.
Yeah,
and
check out our archive.
And yes, check out our archive on the KBOO website. That is kboo.fm/program/radiogeekly.
Oh yeah, we're on all those social medias too. So just give us a look up.
Yes,
and join us next month for another amazing and rousing episode of Geekdom.
Yes.
On a Radio Geekly.
Yes. And Ray, we'll have you play that last track on the CD to send us off. So take care, folks. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.